Blog Talk Radio.
This is your host, David Nathan. How is everybody, gods and goddesses, ladies and gentlemen, loving souls? I hope you are all well and that you are finding your place in this crazy matrix in which we are living, and that you are managing to hold on despite all of the insanity that's erupting around you, because you're going to need your deepest spiritual convictions to get you through what is going on in the world today. We're really happy to have you with us. We didn't have a show last week, and it's really great for me to be back and have this opportunity to chat with you and to chat with another guest and to try to give you guys some more information on what's going on out there and keep our heads above water, keep us enlightened, and keep us on the path to a better world. And talking about a better world, I promised a young man that I met on Facebook that I would give mention today before we got the meat of the show. And, I'm really inspired, you know, by a lot of the younger generation because, you know, the older folks, you know, those of us, I'm saying us, I'm sort of dating myself now, but we've been around for a while and, you know, we've come up with enough fluoride in our systems and mercury in our systems perhaps to just make us in enough TV programming to kind of just nullify our sensitivities. But there are a lot of young people out there that are really, they want to make things happen and they're not taking no for an answer. And they are finding ways to make that change. They're not just sitting back and talking about it. As a matter of fact, our guest today is one of them. But this other gentleman is 19 years old, I believe. His name is Alexander Cody. I believe it's Cody. So, Alexander, if you're listening to this and I'm mispronouncing your middle name, I'm going to go with Cody. Cody Foster. He is from Maine, and this is what he's doing. I'm going to read from his blog. He says, about me and what I'm doing. He says, welcome to my blog and welcome to this journey. I, Alexander Foster, am setting out on a trek from the easternmost town in the continental United States, which I think is Lubeck, Maine, and that's just a pronunciation thing that I'm not sure about, to the westernmost town, which is Cape Alava, Washington. And he actually started today on a self-built solar-powered trike or tricycle. During this trek, I will be stopping and interviewing notable scientists, academics, social activists, and everyday people from our communities for an upcoming documentary I will be filming about climate change, social change, and changing our world. I am writing for a great many things: renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, love, equality, democracy, revolution, and I am writing against many things: fossil fuels, corporate governance, a corrupt government, nuclear energy, tar sands, poverty, pollution, the 1%, an invalid economy, and war. If you would like to join me along this trek and ride for a cause, there is 6,000 miles to do so. The world is changing fast. So too must our perceptions on what is true and good in a world that has been so overtaken by the bad. Join me, if you like, in the cities and towns that I pass through on bikes, skateboards, rollerblades, or solar trikes. Stay through the whole trek, if you like, but no matter what you choose to do, choose to change the world. And he says, Trek to Change the World is a sponsored project of the Cobbs Cook Community Learning Center, a tax-exempt charitable organization. Now, if you guys want to, who are listening, and if you want to find out more about Alexander and what he's going through, The website is trektochangetheworld.com. He had planned to start this in October, and I believe it was weather conditions and maybe a few things with the tricycle that kept him from doing so. He did start today, and he got 33 miles on his journey on an extremely hilly, extremely cloudy, and going up through a lot of hills, apparently. So that was his last note on Facebook. I find this is amazing, and I'm really encouraged by it. The youth in me, the young person in me, is encouraged by this because it makes me feel alive. It makes me feel that the work that I'm doing to help, you know, bring more knowledge to people is worth it. It makes me feel that there is hope for the world. So again, the website for Alexander is Trek, that's T-R-E-C-K, to change the world.com. And his name is Alexander Cody, K-O-D-E, Foster. And you can look him up on Facebook, and you can follow what he's doing, 6,000 miles on a solar-powered tricycle. This is really awesome stuff that a young man is doing. So I really applaud him, and I told him I would give him this plug. And as he continues on this journey and as we continue this show, I'm going to try to follow where he's at. And if he's got any notes or anything posted to his blog, I want to share that with you guys as well. Now, you know that the chat room is open. So if you want to go into the chat room and you want to comment or you have questions for our guests today or observations, please feel free. You don't have to use the toll-free call-in if you don't want to. If you want to use the toll-free call-in, please do. I'd love to hear your voice. But that's up to you, all right? But there is a toll-free call-in number. I'm going to chat with our guest today for, say, approximately an hour or so, and then you guys can feel free to do your thing. And any questions or any observations, again, that you feel you might want to share or ask or whatever, I would love for you to either post those in the chat room. Our producer will get those to me, or you can use the toll-free number and call in. Now, talking about other young people that are out to change the world, I'm also really impressed by this young man, and he is on our show today live from New Zealand, actually. His name is Vinny Eastwood, a.k.a. Mr. News, and he was born in 1984, which is the same year as George Orwell's masterpiece, and we all know about 1984, and by the way, they are behind schedule, and they're going to get further behind schedule. They don't know that, but or maybe they do, or maybe that's what they're afraid of. And also, 1984 was the same year of New Zealand's neoliberal economic reforms. And I believe he started in the telecommunications industry, and he quit when he noticed that lying to the customers caused the company's profit margins to go up. So unable to work or have an employer in the conventional sense, Vincent left the mainstream media and began to make his own news by interviewing activists about real issues that truly affect New Zealand and the world. His idea is to get the activists who live and breathe the issues and are not bound by corporate or political parties to be the pundits, reporters, and watchdogs on the multifaceted agendas of the global elite. He hopes one day to be part of an alternative media revolution, which obviously he really already is, that will replace the mainstream media with something that's relevant. An ardent patriot and activist, Vinny has risked arrest several times to get the best footage possible and is known for his flamboyant style of filmmaking, both in the political sphere and music events. One element he wants to bring to the conspiracy movement is music, in an effort to revitalize politics and get the youth involved, because Vinny believes it is the media's job to keep an eye on the powerful, to expose the corrupt, and to let the population know what's really going on. Without such responsibility, there is nothing to stop the world coming to catastrophe at the hands of the few that control so much. His credence is, I swear eternal vigilance against tyranny in all its forms to replace.
That's vigilance.
Oh, thank you. You know, I'll have to tell you another story about that later. I swear. Say that again.
Vigilance.
Yes, indeed. I swear eternal vigilance against tyranny in all its forms to replace it with justice, love, understanding, knowledge, and strength of purpose. Thank you, Vinny. You know, I read an audiobook recently, and I'm pretty proud about my pronunciation, but, you know, you read a lot, and sometimes you just state the wrong things. Thank you for being on the show, my friend. Really good to have you on.
It happens with the computer recording thing. I remember I was listening to another thing last night, and they were talking about MK Ultra, Black Ops. It's Black Ops. It's Black Ops. Okay.
I know. The person that I was reading the audiobook for was just so angry at me sometimes. She's like, how could you mispronounce that? And I'm just like, I don't know, you know. But anyway.
It must be a temporal fluoride distortion in your brain.
Maybe so. I don't know the last time I actually said that word, vigilance. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, that's a bad sign.
Well, you know, I try to be vigilant, however. So,
I don't know how to pronounce it already.
it's all about practice. It's all about putting it into practice, you know. So that's really what it comes down to.
Conversations with some people, and they're like, you know what I mean. It's like, yeah, I do. I was just nitpicking just for the heck of it.
Well, I appreciate the correction anyway, because, it keeps me humble. All right, so.
Well, we've got to do a bit of course correction, you know, and you were talking earlier about how you're inspired by the younger generations and stuff. I'm like 7 years older than the previous gentleman who you mentioned, and a lot of the things that you read out, like what he's behind, what he promotes, and all of that sort of stuff, I agree with. Of course, a lot of them I wanted to kind of expand on, go actually wrong, this is why, blah 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 blah, and this is what somebody 7 years older has come to the conclusion of, because I feel if you're a young person, the best way to gain knowledge is to hang around older people who already have it and talk to them and absorb it from them. And that's the best way I've found. Most of my friends are much older than me, whether they be 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, even 60 years older than me. It doesn't seem to matter. I get along with them fine, and they teach me things. And if you've had children before, and I haven't, but parents seem to say this, that your children teach you a lot. So there's a symbiotic relationship here, and I think there's a relationship between age and cynicism. The older you get, the more cynical you get, and if you don't interact with the younger generations, if you're an activist who just hangs around his old activist group of mates and try to out radicalize each other, you'll only deepen yourself into a grander scheme of total and complete cynicism, which will prevent you from actually making any real change in the world.
Well,
that's just my opinion as a cynical 26 year old at this point.
Well, you've got a little bit of a combination going there, because what I get from you is the enthusiasm of your generation, but at the same time I get a little bit of that old cynicism in you as well. But I think the thing that inspires me with guys like yourself and with Coach or with Alexander is the energy that you're just going to get out there and make it happen. You know, and I think what happens to the older generation, say guys 20, 30 years older than you, is that they talk about it and they you know, biatch and moan about it, but they get to the point, but they don't want to really, they don't want to change that status quo now. They don't want to change the comfort where they're at. They're more entrenched in their fears. Maybe they're more afraid to die. They're more embarrassed or whatever the situation is. So they'll continue to talk about it, but actually getting out there and doing something is, you know, that they're a little bit afraid of. And you know, with you guys from this generation, from, you know, yourself and Alexander, you know, I think there's less fear involved. I mean, you don't seem to be that concerned when you get out with your bullhorn and start, using it to rally people at activist events, are you?
Not in particular, but then again, I was conveniently born without a sense of shame. And the whole thing you're talking about how old people and young people relate to me, just randomly, and I like to think about random things all the time. It's just kind of how my mind works. But I saw an episode of Family Guy once, and they had a young Michael Jackson there saying, the adult in me likes the nutrition of Kellogg's Corn Flakes. And then he just morphs into the older Michael Jackson, and he goes, but the adult in me still likes the kid in me.
Yeah.
Well, coming back to it though, I don't know if I see a whole lot of points in resisting or anything like that. I just do it because it's really fun, and you get to learn so much interesting stuff, and you get to see cumulative effects of your work. So whether or not there's a point to it, it matters not, because it's enjoyable in the meantime. And I think that's what people should really start to try and do, is to enjoy their lives whilst at the same time actually creating something, because most people, they are quasi-capable of enjoying their lives to an extent because they're involved in, say, a soccer team or something of that nature. How much personal development and how much knowledge of the world do you wind up getting out of just your soccer mates? If you don't rotate around, as I do, people across the spectrum, some people who I agree with, some people who I don't care. I just go and listen to them because they know more about what they know about, even if I disagree about it, than I do. So why would you deprive yourself of the opportunity of meeting somebody new who knows something that you don't already know? And if I say something and you think it's wrong, then just tell me something that I don't already know. Okay? That's the main point here. I love to be wrong. Absolutely love it, because it's an opportunity to bloomin' learn something for a change.
Okay.
So many, there's so many people, especially elder people, who are kind of getting set in their ways to a certain extent and don't change their lifestyles at all, don't really have any new friends, don't really expand their minds or anything, wasting their lives away, watching television, doing all. I could never live like that, you know. You've only got a short amount of time here on this earth, allegedly. And so, why would you waste a freaking moment of it if there's so much possibility out there, learning so much more than you could ever come up with on your own or come up with in a couple of mates or something like that? You can't have five people sitting around the roof of the world and suddenly figure out what the world is all about. It takes a comprehensive cacophony of copious consignments of opinions before you can reach anything near that type of worldview where you're starting to think, I sort of know what's going on here. That's about the stage that I'm at now. I'm starting to see in a large degree what's really going on in the world, because I'm interviewing people like G. Edward Griffin or George Norrie from Coast to Coast FM, mm-hmm. Lindsay mm-hmm. Williams, Benjamin Fulford, you know, all these people who are really, really skilled and talented in their particular areas and fields of research. I don't just listen to one or the other. I listen to all of them, and I have a huge, huge quantity. And I'm just looking at it the other day and been surprised at how many people that I've interviewed about how many subjects. And it's primarily because I don't like to research. You know, I don't like to go through perusing hundreds of pages of government documentation with all that legalese fiction language of BS on top of nonsense, on top of hate speech. It's insane, and it drives me nuts just to look at government legislation, namely because if I did read it, I'd fully understand it, and it would probably freak me out to the ninth degree.
Right.
So I'd rather instead have an activist who has done all that research, has joined the dots, has gone through various other meetings and public forums and filed efficient information act requests and what have you, to come on my show and tell me their story. And you'd be surprised just how informative it is just talking to somebody who's informed about one particular subject. And that's the best way to research, in my opinion, is you go and ask the researchers what their opinion is.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to pull you back to a couple of things and then we can move on, because you said something that kind of interests me. Now, you said in the differentiation between your age and Alexander's age that there were some things that I had read off of his blog that you identified with, and there were certain things that you maybe did not. You want to elaborate on that at all?
Well, there's the climate change issue, for example. The second I hear anything about related to climate change, it's instantly just kind of like off the beaten track for me, because that's been done. It's a total and utter scam, and the scientists are so persecuted when they come out against it. I've come up with a new term called climate cultist. And if you have a look into the scientific literature, you can find that there is indeed a human element to warming, but it is so infinitesimal that to pay hundreds of billions of dollars over the next 100 years or so every year for everybody on every single form of human life, which is a carbon tax, which is what they want, then the amount of difference that it would make to the overall temperatures would be three decimal places behind 0.0 degrees. Okay, absolutely insignificant. So it matters not how much humans are contributing to climate change, because it has been changing for 4 billion years. And at worst, you're looking at maybe a 1 millimeter or something of that nature rise in sea level every couple of years or so. I think people are capable of moving a few millimeters every year. You know, I mean, I'm not disabled and out of my head on psychiatric drugs, so I can probably do that. You know, a few millimeters here, a few millimeters there. You know, there's the Maldives Island, for example. All the climate cultists are going, oh, it's so no terrible. If you don't believe in climate change, go talk to somebody in a Pacific Island nation. You know, they'll tell you what it's all about. Really? Okay, let's go to the Maldives then. Well, Maldives, look what they've done. They've massacred all of their mangrove swamps, which were holding their freaking sandy spit of an island chain in place.
Right.
And planted crops on it, which don't hold it in place,
right.
and then the water starts washing away their island, and they go, oh, it's climate change.
But. Now, there's a slight difference between climate change and global warming, is there not? Because now, global warming was the big, that's what everybody was talking about initially with Al Gore and all of that.
It's all the same thing. It's being used by the words matter not, they're being used by the same crowd to connote the exact same agenda. They used to be talking about global cooling, then it was global warming, and then it was climate change. You know why? Because the sun has a 12-year cycle of being cool and then being warm. And so each and every time that their theories fell over, they had to come up with a new name to replace it. And now we're currently into the climate change, which means the climate changes. Now, Have you had the weather change?
Yeah, we're in
some
climate
point?
Change now, right? I know what you're saying. I mean,
it happens all the time, and you have a look at carbon and the relationship that it has with the temperatures, and there's a 700-year lag between carbon and heat differentials, which means that it is in fact heat which produces carbon, not carbon that produces heat. So there's the relationship right there. The reason why you have those big delays is because the sun's rays take about 700 years to permeate all the way through all the entirety of the oceans and raise global temperature that way. So it's a very, very long time, much longer than you, I, or any subsequent generations of our children will ever be alive to see, let alone if they had any effect on the climate at all, which they only just barely do. 97% of greenhouse gases is water vapor, mm-hmm. and carbon is 0.3%. Oh, no, I think it might be, I think it's around 0.3% of the total greenhouse gases. And there's a organization called 350.org who says we can only have 350 parts per million of carbon, and in order to keep the climate completely stable, as if having human emissions at a particular point will stop the Earth's climate from ever changing. That is insane, considering there's also 7000.org who want the carbon to be raised up to what it was back in the Cambrian period. Okay, so when you talk about climate change, it's merely a catch-all term to corrupt people into thinking that there's some description of massive crisis so that they will willingly open their wallets and elect governments that will gradually increase taxation over virtually every human activity. If you have a look at human activity in general, from respiration to building a house to driving a car to working in the fields and growing food, it produces carbon. That is why it has been selected as the ultimate tool of control by the elite. They've hatched the schemes back in the Club of Rome in the 1970s when saying that in looking for a new enemy to unite us, pollution, global warming fit the bill, because it was then that humanity would be seen as the enemy. So unite, you have to unite the human race against itself in order to accept a program that is so dehumanizing that nobody would ever accept it otherwise. That's Agenda 21. That's Codex Alimentarius, the complete and total control grid patterns for all human life, basically. If you have a Codex Alimentarius, for example, going to regulate all your natural vitamins and minerals. They're going to stop you from being able to grow your own food. They're going to so on and so forth. The just general ramifications just of Codex Alimentarius alone, according to Dr. Rima Labo from the Health Freedom Movement in the United States. I don't think she lives there anymore because she's too afraid, as you would be. She says that it will result in not less than 3 billion deaths, a billion from preventable diseases and 2 billion from simple starvation or something around those lines. So on top of that, there's Agenda 21. If anyone's not heard of Agenda 21, you go Google that, Agenda 21 for Dummies. Good video, just gives you a little bit of background on it. But in a nutshell, it's a massive document that categorizes and chronicles every single human activity and has a global to local program of how to control said activity in every single conceivable way. If you live in a rural area, if you have any form of freedom left, you won't. You're going to be living in a tightly packed, along railway lines, slave blocks, and all the rural areas are going to be cut off to human activity or highly surveilled, and check passes. Nobody will have money, no cash, gold, anything. That'll all be seized. No medical treatments to the extent that we have today. It's deemed unsustainable. Agriculture, deemed unsustainable. Public education, deemed unsustainable. They even have a total education campaign of telling people that they have to prepare for the world of work, and that is the only thing that they will ever be taught, is how to be obedient workers. There's
that's not too far of what's going on with them now, as a matter of fact.
That's because Agenda 21 is already being implemented. If you have a look at virtually any legislation that's being passed in your country in the last 20 years, nearly about the last 20 years or so, you will see Agenda 21 protocol being implemented. That's part of the global to local program. It is the mechanism by which the world government will maintain complete dominance over mankind forever. Codex Alimentarius is the protocol to make sure that people cannot regain any strength or independence forever. And climate change is, and carbon taxes is the mechanism by which the funding will come to this world government and its entire suppression and control syndrome run by a group of ruthless psychopaths with absolutely no conscience. That's what I disagree with when somebody just mentions climate change. That's what comes to mind.
That was a lot right there. And, you know, climate change is a hot button topic. And I know people on Facebook that are very progressive in their thinking, and yet they get around to climate change. And for them, climate change means global warming. It just doesn't mean the fact that there's changes going on within the climate. And so they've taken that term, and now they use it as a cover-all term, and under that they can slip all of the regulation, which you're talking about. And I understand that. So I really appreciate you clearing that up, actually, and that whole little expose in there was really quite excellent. Okay, but you said you didn't have a point. I think you said earlier that you didn't have a point. You were just doing all of this for fun. But you do have a point. You swear eternal vigilance against tyranny in all its forms to replace it with justice, love, and understanding, knowledge, and strength of purpose. You're having fun at that, but you do have an intention.
Well, and also at the bottom of that list of, you know, statements and demands and everything, it says subject to change.
Oh, I don't have that on my – I don't have that here.
don't worry. If you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, there's a section called Vinnie's Bio or something of that nature. Vinnie Bio, right there underneath Kiwi Collaborators. And it's got an entire list of all these things because I find that your modus operandi, your methods, and how you should act and what you should do changes rather constantly. And I very rarely will cling on to an idea for a terribly long time because I think that as soon as somebody produces contrary evidence to my current beliefs, that I have to change my beliefs. not try and destroy the evidence. And that's what the climate change argument is basically about. If there's evidence against what you're saying, you demonize them. What's it called? Cognitive dissonance and reptilian brain responses. These are two concepts that I think every truther should know and know very well, that and propaganda. But cognitive dissonance is a psychological condition where you have a worldview built up. Let's say, for example, you believe the government loves you and it protects you and it wants to make sure that nothing bad happens to you, etc. Okay. When you find out that that's not true, it's like losing a loved one. It's like losing a parent, and you have these automatic mechanized responses that start to come into play. You'll either start attacking the messenger, the person who told you this, and what have you, suddenly becomes your enemy, and oh, they're evil, and they'll start calling you names and things of that nature. They will completely ignore you, act like you're not even there, act like nothing was said, and just completely deny it. Or three, they'll completely escape from the scenario. You ever have a conversation with somebody, you're talking about something that threatens their worldview, and all of a sudden the conversation just ends and they walk away? Happens all the time. That's cognitive dissonance, okay? And it's not because that person hates you or because you're saying something wrong or anything. It's a psychological condition. It's something that you cannot account for. And the other part I was saying was the reptilian brain response. It's the motor cortex in the bottom of your cerebellum or something like that. I'm not terribly good with scientific ology.
Okay.
Yes, and it is the fight or flight mechanism, the survivalist part of the brain, the reactionary part of the brain. Have you ever said something that you feel like you shouldn't have and you know that you wouldn't have had you counted to 10 seconds? That's a reptilian brain response. It's your fight or flight mechanism engaging through your mouth. All of a sudden you start getting incredibly abusive and angry, or maybe even you take a swing at somebody or whatever, and then you just kind of like calm down, just go and use your conscious mind for a moment. You think, man, calling that person a name wouldn't be very helpful. Punching them in the face wouldn't be very helpful either. I shouldn't do that. That's your conscious mind overriding the baseline reptilian brain, which is what psychopaths have a problem with. They operate almost entirely upon reptilian brain responses, and that's why they cause so much damage. That's why they appear so reckless, and that's why people like me, who have a conscience, who try to use it as best of my ability, basically don't like to see it happen to anyone. And it's gotten so bad for me. I mean, I might have some kind of I've got a mental block against working for people. Like, no kidding. Mm-hmm. Somebody comes up and asks me to do a job for them or something like that, and it means I have to go in 5 days a week and I have to obey their every command. I can't do it. I literally, psychologically, cannot do it. I haven't had a job in 3 years, and I've been making my own money. I've been going out to film private dance parties and making videos for them, putting it up on the internet. I've been making and selling DVDs. I've been asking for donations from the listeners. I've been doing all sorts of stuff. I must have accomplished maybe 100 different projects in the last couple of years just to keep myself afloat.
Yeah.
And that's how much harder I'm prepared to work when I'm working for myself, rather than having to follow somebody else's orders, which I basically just can't do anymore.
Well, you know, I remember you saying, I think it was in a video that I was watching, I think the video where you spoke after David Icke spoke down in New Zealand, that you said you decided that you didn't want to work for people anymore, you wanted to work with them.
Yeah, that's precisely correct. I've noticed that it's not competition that works best in an economy, it's actually collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
That's when people are at their best, is when they're working as part of a cohesive team. They don't have to be there. They're there of their own volition. They talk about what they want to talk about. They can't be told to shut up. That kind of freedom and free association, I believe, is the reason why we have so many great accomplishments going on in the truth media field. There are many documentaries that are getting out there, just made by volunteers and all of that sort of stuff. So I don't think you actually necessarily need to pay for people in order to get them to work with you, but you certainly should pay for them if you're telling them to work for you.
Yeah, I hear that.
Because I don't think you should be able to order a volunteer around. I mean, they're volunteers, right?
Right.
When people volunteer into the military, they volunteer into a life of absolute freaking servitude and total control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's right. I don't like that. I don't like the ability of people being able to say what they think to be kind of smashed out and have them feel threatened with having their employment or their money supply terminated because of what they think. Okay, I think it's what you do that truly counts. And I've been to countless protests, filmed countless activists, done like 350 YouTube videos in just a few short years, interviewed the top names in talk radio and the Patriot movement. I've built a web platform called guerrillamedia.co.nz where I have contributors from all over New Zealand and all over the world who are able to post their articles and their videos and their stories and their radio interviews directly to the main feed. So if anybody wants to get some information from all different sides of the spectrum of discourse, I don't really retain too much editorial privilege. I just let them post it because people need a media platform ultimately that they don't have to pay for on an official looking website or what have you. So I provided that for them. And because of me providing that service for them, they provide a service for me by providing me content free of charge. Just like I pay for the website, they give me the content. People enjoy reading it. People enjoy watching it. And most importantly, it's a multimedia platform because we live in a media world in the mainstream sense that is totally and utterly devoted to brainwashing people across multiple spectrums of media. Like you're getting brainwashed through magazines, television, newspapers, radio, etc. I think that you need counter brainwashing programs to be implemented in the exact same way. The only way to do this, of course, with a minimum of expense, is to go to the internet. So, sure enough, I've created a web platform, I've created a YouTube channel, and I've got the best radio show in all of New Zealand. And again, same principle as Guerrilla Media, all of those radio shows, all of those blog postings, and all of those YouTube videos are made specifically with the help of the activists in the international community because it's they who know what they're talking about. I don't claim to know what I'm talking about. I don't claim to have credibility. I'm just here to have fun. And if anybody needs their funny bone tickled and to have some good fun and have some coverage of their incredible discoveries and ideas, it's the activists, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. they're the people who actually sacrifice for the rest of us. They endure a hell of a lot of hardship. And it's usually out of hardship that they get galvanized into activism in the first place. People think it's a dirty word. It's not a dirty word. It's been made a dirty word by those people who want it to be because they know that activists, if people were to listen to them all the time, would expose every single bit of skullduggery and cockroach-like activity that is going on in your country today, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's why they get demonized. If they were just telling the truth and weren't offending anybody, it just wouldn't seem like the truth, would it? Because if you tell the truth about any topic at all, you'll always offend both sides. Because both people just seem to think that there's a right and a wrong answer. The truth in most things is no longer black and white. The truth in most things is gray. And right. So as a result, as I mentioned earlier about cognitive dissonance, when you start to realize and tell people that the paradigm in which they believe right or wrong or black and white is in fact wrong altogether and it's in fact gray, they can't handle it to a large degree. And I think that's what activists experience a lot, is people just can't handle it, and they're going out to public meetings and protests and things of that nature. They're engaging with the public, and often they'll experience a lot of flack, but in general, they're just having a real good time doing it because they get to meet up with other activists, other people who actually care.
Well, okay.
I feel that's the main difference between alternative media and mainstream media, is that the people in the alternative media actually care, and that's why they're there, whereas the people in the mainstream media have actually just been trained how to do their hair properly and are waiting for their next Gucci bag or their next trip to Tahiti.
They don't even do their hair, actually. Somebody does that for them.
Not in New Zealand. We're a pretty piss-poor country down here in the slave South Pacific. It was nice and sunny, though.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, how you yourself, you know, I mean, I don't want to keep harping on the age thing because that gets kind of silly after a while. But at the same time, nevertheless, you know, here you are, a young guy growing up in New Zealand. You started in the telecommunications industry. What were you doing, by the way, in telecommunications?
I was the best tele salesman you could ever see. Top of the boards for a full 6 months, and it's there that I developed my ability to manipulate people with my voice.
And a very good ability that is. What happened after that, though? I mean, so you discovered that lying to people was the only way to really make a dollar in that business.
Oh, no. I basically never lied.
Okay.
But I saw, you know, the differences between an actual lie and just not telling the whole truth, right?
Yeah,
it's because people have these preconceived notions about things that you felt that you kind of had to bend the truth just a tiny bit while not lying to them and then making sure that they fully understood their decision after the fact. That was my kind of mode of operations, and that allowed people to trust me because I would tell them the truth in the end. But the problem is some people don't even recall what you've said, and there's often a whole lot of stuff that goes down in telecommunications where people will be brought into the manager's office for saying things that aren't true on the phone if somebody complains and what have you. But I don't know. I just felt that the whole game itself was very dishonest. My bosses were basically self-important sociopaths, sort of scumbags who only cared about the money. And I started watching a few documentaries, mostly by Alex Jones and various others, a huge amount of them or what have you. And I got promoted to be a business account manager. Now, at that time, I was kind of wanting to hang up my guns, as it were. I didn't really want to do sales anymore because I was just tired of it. It really takes it out of you, especially if you've been doing it for nearly 2 years, as I had, and performing at a top level. And I started noticing in my new job, just how many things were wrong with the company. I was a pretty major telecommunications company.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company and suggested ways that they could improve these things, improve the life of the employees, cutting costs, new programs that they could use, etc. You know, it was a pretty comprehensive report. And after about maybe a 15-minute meeting with the you know, the leader of the owner of the business account manager team and a few of the other account managers and what have you. And then you just got a phone call. You got, okay, I've got a meeting. I've got to go. Nothing was really discussed. We only got to like page 1.5. And all the other account managers were agreeing with me. Blah, 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 blah. Didn't hear nothing back. Mm-hmm. Until about a week later or something, and I messaged him and I said, you know, what's happening? What are we going to do about all this? And he's like, well, as far as I'm concerned, the issue is closed. Day or two later, my boss comes to me and says, hey, Vinny, let's go down and have a coffee next door. And I go, okay. He slaps down a piece of paper on the table and says, you know, sign it. And I say, well, what's in it? And the nutshell is 6 weeks pay and I have to leave in the next 5 minutes and pack up all my stuff.
You're kidding me.
Mm-mm. And I thought, well, you know, I haven't had a summer holiday in quite some time. Thank you very much. I'll take that. And over the summer, I lived off that money, and I then ran out of it again, had to get another job, working for a much smaller company. But I bring a lot of elements to whatever job that I'm doing. And if people don't allow me to expand in different directions or something, not only do I get ticked off, but they don't benefit from the full spectrum of the things that I can do. I'm multi-talented. I'm like Kim Jong-il to a certain extent. And I was able to advance there in a very quick succession in many different directions and taking on a lot of different responsibilities, developing their company for them, and realized that they were only paying us about 10% of what they were paying other people in the industry that were doing a similar job. And so one of the guys who was heading up a team there hired me and a couple of other people from their company. Their company wound up going bust because they were just basically being too greedy, not paying their workers enough. and I made a heap of cash. I wound up with $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping vouchers, a big mall chain here in New Zealand and Australia. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point that after getting phone calls from my boss at like 10 o'clock on a Friday night while I'm at my friend's place having a beer after a long week, telling me to get off the couch, go find a pen and paper, write down the numbers of a client's of a client to give a ring on Monday kind of stuff. That was not an isolated incident, just total invasion of privacy, not respecting boundaries of work. Like, how many times did your boss call you outside of work hours? For me, it was daily, right? Mm-hmm. And it just became too much. I started to get really, really effed off. And at this point, I was starting to really get into my my truth again. I was listening to the Alex Jones Show every day, and I was looking at the mainstream media here. I was just like, man, there is nothing worthy of people's attention going on in this country. Okay, we're not all the stuff that I was watching. It's all from the American perspective. There's nothing from New Zealand. Nothing.
Is it like that down there?
It is exactly the same, and that's what's funny. You have a look as a New Zealander at an American documentary, and you take the precursors or the various different eclectic symbols. For example, you know, Freemasons, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral right. Commission, World Health Organization, blah, 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 blah. All of these different international organizations that are running the U.S. right now, you have a look in New Zealand, and it's the exact same thing. You look in the U.K., it's the exact same thing. When people don't see it in their own neck of the woods and they start looking outwards, I don't know. What kind of an effect does that have? But I just was I lapsed into sort of feeling really depressed after I quit my job. I was just like, man, I can't do this. And I made some purchases with my Westfield shopping voucher money. Mm-hmm. Got myself a Mac computer and a handy cam, and I just went out there and started doing it. I was like, man, I always wanted to be a filmmaker, and here's my chance. Go for it. And yeah. I always wanted to be well, like everybody else, I always wanted to be loved. And I found out that it's when you do stuff for other people, like activists don't have the ability to make films or make radio shows for themselves, most of them, okay? Mm-hmm. So they couldn't do it. So I did it for them because they deserved it, okay? They'd sacrificed their lives, their time, blah, 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 blah. It's about time somebody made a bloody sacrifice for them and give them the coverage that they deserve. They're soundbited and manipulated by the media and demonized and all this kind of stuff. And I just found it was tremendously unfair. Why should you put up with that kind of crap? I don't think anybody ever should. And it's when you have realizations like that, it becomes incumbent upon you, the person who had that realization, to make a difference. There's so many people out there who come up with these great ideas and then they go to somebody else to see if they can actually fulfill those ideas. This is the stupidest thing I ever saw. Okay? If you come up with a great idea, just do it. Develop it. Okay? You're the one who came up with the idea. It's your responsibility. Just do it. Okay? That's the only thing I agree with about Nike. Don't like the sweatshops.
Okay. That's pretty amazing. How's that working out for you, though? I mean, you've got the successful radio show and you've got the several websites and stuff. Are you able to survive off of all of this?
Barely. I'm able to survive now a lot better than I was back in the day. I used to be receiving a government benefit and things of that nature because I just had a real mental block against going to work to the point where I nearly had panic attacks at the idea and I was stressing out and, oh my goodness, I just really couldn't do it. So I was getting a sickness benefit for that for about 6 months to a year.
You got a benefit for that? Oh, that's interesting to know. Go ahead.
Yeah. Come to New Zealand, we'll give you a government check to run an anti-government organization. But that was just basically my therapy And it came down to the point where I actually thought, man, I really do have to make a business of this. I have to make a go of it. Because of the fact that you're in a different industry, like you're trying to sell something to somebody across a phone, it's very different from somebody who's making a documentary or doing a radio show that tries to do things for you and you get access to that for free. You see what I'm saying? Because they don't have to pay anything. The only way that you can get people to contribute money towards what you're doing is either to buy products off your website or to give you a donation or to give you a subscription fee of some description. And I've come to the wall many times, financially speaking, and I'm fortunate to have a girlfriend that works really hard doing extremely tiring garden maintenance, who's been supporting me to a large extent for these last 3 years. I've been going out with her five. She first met me when I was a salesman, and she's been with me through all of these big changes in my life, and very intensely grateful to her. And there's all these other ways that you can make money. Subscriptions, for example, I ask people to donate $5 a week. Okay, this is a little bit more than the price of the average cup of coffee these days. Mm-hmm. And they just donate that every week. So I've got something to, say, pay my internet bill with, pay the website hosting fees with, etc. I've also designed upwards of 11 different DVDs full of all original New Zealand content. Okay. That is applicable globally. If you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com /DVDs .html, you'll be able to see a lot of those titles there. And these are things like, you know, Dr. Paul Conitas, world's leading authority on fluoride toxicity. He comes to New Zealand, and this is what I started doing a long time ago and have kept continuing to do it because it's necessary. Going to public meetings, filming them and uploading them raw, because you'll notice with a lot of public meetings where a lot of important and interesting things are discussed, nobody records them. And if they do record them, they never upload them. So nobody ever gets to see them other than the 12 or so people that were there in that bloody room.
Exactly.
That's bloody stupid. Okay, so I was just like, okay, well, great. I'm going to film these. I'm going to upload them all raw. Okay, it's the least amount of effort that I can do. And all of a sudden, boom, you've got all these amazing speakers, what have you. Then I thought, okay, how can I improve on this? Because when you're talking about business, it's all about adding value. Okay, if you've got a video, okay, great. How can I make this video better? Well, how about I actually cut in the slides that they're showing you? Okay, that makes it a little bit more high quality. Yeah, okay, cool.
Right.
Now, what about if we design a DVD cover and a DVD label so you can print them? And then sell those off the website. Hey, that actually doesn't look too bad, and it looks really amazing. And after I'd finished doing all this and sent it to Dr. Paul Connett, let me preface this. When he was speaking at the conference that I was filming, he said the best interview that he's had and the best video that anybody's ever done with him was Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. After he saw what I did for him, he said, Vinny, you've just made the best presentation I've ever seen for me.
Wow.
So it's high praise indeed.
Yeah.
High praise indeed. And it's not isolated either. I've got a bit of an ego, and I'm very upfront and open about it. So that way, if it starts to show through, I need people to kind of, you know, pull back on the reins on me a little bit. That's why I maintain friendships with so many activists and advocates against corruption, because I feel that it's entirely possible that I could become corrupt, that I could start engaging in untold quantities of scumbaggery. And so I've surrounded myself with people who simply wouldn't let that happen. And it's not to abdicate my responsibility. It's to ensure a framework by which I can work within. Because if you want to talk about laws and how they should be applied and what kind of principles to follow, activists are the people you should really be talking to about making your legislation. And as far as I'm concerned, my opinion doesn't matter all that much. It's actually the opinion of all these people who know what the hell they're talking about in graphic, vivid detail that you should be asking to give you rules to follow. And they all have, and I try to follow them as best I can. And as I do, I always find loopholes until they get closed up. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for a way out or a way in or a different way or something of that nature. It's what I think about trying to achieve perfection is that you never will. But if you never try, then you'll never even get close. Okay, so that's what people should really think about doing. There's so many activists and truthers out there who don't start their blog, who don't start their YouTube channel, who don't start contributing to the fight because they think, I'm going to do it well and perfect first time. And this is the – I don't understand that because nobody has ever started straight off from square one doing something that's blimmin' perfect. If anything, you have to go out there and do it before you can even start to think about doing things even close to perfect. I mean, look at Alex Jones's films, for example. He did heaps of them, and some of them are actually, they're all really good films, but you notice the progression about how much more talented as a filmmaker, as a commentator, as a writer, as a producer, as a promoter, as a radio show host. If you go from point A to point B, you notice that natural progression. That is what you should really be thinking about, is not about achieving perfection, but about achieving progress. If you're doing nothing, what are you going to progress to? Okay, nothing comes from nothing.
That's very quotable right there. I think a lot of people who are listening in who have any kind of goals whatsoever, not even whether it's truth or activism or whether it's just pursuing anything in their life. I know a lot of people sit back and wait for the perfect moment to do it or wait until they can present it perfectly. And I like what you're saying, really. You're just sort of like, just jump in there and be unafraid to have it be flawed. And until you can work it out.
Well, life is not a dress rehearsal, nor is it a spectator sport. You're not sitting on the sidelines when you can be playing the whole game and be the one scoring the touchdowns. Okay? Well, I don't know. Why do people have that mentality? Oh, I don't want to do that. People will see me as this, that, or the other. They're already gonna. Oh, I don't want to come out as a truther because they'll wind up exterminating me and sending us all to a FEMA camp. They're already gonna. Oh, I don't want to come out against the medical industry. They're gonna inject poisons into my babies forcibly and stuff like that and make my life real hell. They're already gonna. You don't have any choice. Okay, that was the worst realization for me. Is that I don't have a choice but to virtually live in abject poverty, trying against all odds to be the best alternative media source in New Zealand for the benefit of all New Zealanders, so that they know what the F is going on for a change. And I just did it. Okay, it's because I wanted to do it. I had a vision. Okay, that's all it takes for anybody to be motivated to get anything done. All you got to have is just a little bit of vision and a hell of a lot of commitment, and you will find a way, okay? Either that or the way will find you. Mm-hmm. I've the other day, for example, I learned that my girlfriend's parents were living at their place right now. I've got a little studio in their basement, and I found out that they think I'm, quote, intolerable to live with, so I'm getting kicked out, and... No, Jack, this isn't funny.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. It was just the way that you said intolerable. I understand that, you know, that there must have been something there that made you say it that way. But go ahead, please.
Oh, they're born-again Christians. They think that God's going to rapture.
That will take care of it.
Yeah. They think that God's going to rapture them, and that if they ever want to do anything in their life, when they say their prayers, something will tell them to do it. Kind of thing. It's just a complete lack of personal responsibility, and it shows in virtually every aspect of their life, and I think it does show in mine to a large extent as well. But when I asked the listeners on my show to donate monies, because I just gave my last $500 to my missus to fix her teeth up a little bit, on my credit card, of course, and all of a sudden I was just freaking broke, and then they tell us we've got to get kicked out, we've got to come up with a bond, a few weeks rent in advance and everything. That's a hell of a lot of money for an activist to come, like me, to come up with off the top of my head. So I asked the listeners, I pleaded with them, and I said, you know, thank you very much for listening, and thank you for contributing all the guest suggestions and all of that. I really need your help now. I don't have enough money to move into a new thing, and that means I don't know where I'm going to live. That means I don't know how I'm going to do my broadcast. I don't know, and I just need your help. Within 24 hours, I had close to $700 worth of donations come in. Within 72 hours, it got up to $1,400 worth of donations coming in. And it was such a complete surprise to me. Like, this came right out of left field. And I was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. People actually really value me now.
You're loved. They like me. They really like me.
Yeah.
No bad expression, but yeah.
No, I do. They like me. They really like me. That was somebody today.
Right, Sally Field, the actress at the Oscars years ago.
Yeah. And Jim Carrey did a good take off of that on a movie called The Mask as well. But this is what occurred to me at that point, is that I wasn't actually prepared for that kind of a response, and I just wept. It was really overwhelming, and I was so grateful that I get to talk to so many interesting people, that so many intelligent and nice and kind and very generous people listen to me and enjoy the show that I do, and respect the efforts that I've made in the alternative media in New Zealand. And like I said, just plain wasn't prepared for it.
That's amazing.
It was. And today, you know, knowing that, knowing how important I am to people, it puts me on with a bigger of even a greater responsibility that I need to take things to the next level now, because life's all about kind of progression, whether that be natural or unnatural progression, it matters not. I think that unless you're growing, unless you're doing new things, then you are losing your value by the second. You need to be accomplishing new elements to your life on a daily basis. Otherwise, I just kind of plumb get bored. I don't want to sit around on my hands and wait for things to happen. I'd rather go out and make them happen. I've got so many achievements, you know, you rattle them off. Top-rated radio show in New Zealand, you know, for this kind of stuff. People compare me to be the Alex Jones of New Zealand. My show is the Coast to Coast AM of New Zealand. People say that they listen to me before they'd listen to David Icke or Red Ice Radio. I mean, it's quite overwhelming, the response. I do put a lot of effort in, and it's good to see that people appreciate it. And to the large extent, I agree with them. I listen to my radio shows and interview guests, and then I listen to other people who've interviewed them, and I just, no ego about it, man, that I get so much more information out of people and such a greater quality of interview because of the element that I'm trying to work with, where it's not about my show and about what I think. It's actually about giving them a platform to let them tell other people what they think. It's about sharing their ideas, not mine. I'm merely there to make sure that it's kept lighthearted and fun, so that the grossness and the horror in a lot of these people's stories is capable of being processed by the average person. The humor element, I find, is one of the most unique and important elements of my show, because everything's so harsh to deal with ultimately. Yes. And I always say, in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. That's why you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show, because of the lighter side of genocide.
I was going to try to get that plug in there before you said it, but you said it first. The lighter side of genocide, indeed. We've got a question from the chat room, and I just want to remind all the folks that are listening live that want to call in. The toll-free number is there on the page to call in and questions or comments of Vinnie. But we have a question that came through on the chat room, so I just want to ask you, this person wants to know, what is your opinion of American politics? And are you there, Vinnie?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just heard something with Skype, and I never know sometimes what's going on with them. What's your opinion of American politics and influence in the world? Pro or con?
Well, see, again, that's going back to the black and white. Is it good or is it bad? Is it a pro or a con? And again, it's both good and bad. For example, I get to watch Family Guy because Americans have made it, and they've also dominated our entire media field here in New Zealand. And the influence of American media domination here in New Zealand is so strong, and you'll love this, that when New Zealand singers sing, they sing with an American accent.
Well,
natural. No. And they don't even realize that they're doing it. That's just what they've heard.
Well, that's what they do. Yeah, but how do you sing with a New Zealand accent? There's a guy
in New Zealand called Trillion, and I just want to give him a plug here. NZ Trillion is his YouTube channel name, and he actually founded an organization advocating for this usage of the New Zealand accent in singing. Okay, and if you go listen to his rap songs, they're freaking awesome, and they're very, very different. It's like I don't know. It's like the difference between a left hook and a right jab or whatever. You know, something's different. Something's very, very different about it. And it comes across with a very strange and surreal and yet very interesting flavor. And when I interview people across all over the world, whether they be from Texas or Louisiana or from upstate New York or from California, I noticed these different accents in the different fields. Like in California, they talk like this.
Yes, and you got that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or in the Bronx, we go around and we talk like this. There's all these great and intricate differences, and I love accents, and I think everybody does. That's another thing you'll experience when you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood show is a huge array of different accents from all over the different regions of the world. You know, we have Australians and New Zealanders and we have French people and people from Tunisia and just all over the place, the UK, Ireland. The Irish accents are often the funniest, I've got to say, that and South Africans. But I think this is one of the great things about speaking English. Is that people speak it all over the world, don't they?
So, but let's go back to the question for a minute, because I have another one popped up, and I want to make sure that that this person feels satisfied. So, aside from the fact that our influence is so pervasive over there that your singers sing with American accents, what else is happening?
Our policies are virtually dictated by America as well. We're having a Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is the current effect of NAFTA or GATT that you'd be able to relate it to in the United States. They're now going to do that here, outsource all our jobs and fine the government or what have you for actually applying the law to corporations that illegally pollute or illegally treat their workers or what have you. They'd be taken to the world court and never be able to get any money out of them. So this is basically the most massive effect that United States foreign policy has to New Zealand, as well as you get the whole global agendas being facilitated through like carbon taxes and Agenda 21 and Codex Alimentarius, as I mentioned earlier. So they have an inordinate amount of influence. Much of it bad. I scarcely see that there's a whole lot of it that's good. I mean, I don't see any American
family guy.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. America is the most entertained and the least informed populace on earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. And make no mistake, that's a bad thing. Okay, because they talk about democracy when the United States isn't a democracy; it's a bloody republic. Okay, you got a constitution, you got inalienable rights, inalienable. Okay, not even aliens can take those away from you. I find that everybody's just forgotten that, and they now think we've got democracy. Well, if you have a democracy, how can it work if you've got an uninformed public? The answer is, it bloody well can't. That's what they want. They want a dumb population. That's why there's been a deliberate dumbing down of America, and that's stretching here too. But again, it's not America setting these policies. It's the American-esque, British, European, doesn't matter where they are, New World Order puppets all financed by Rothschilds. Okay? Rothschild means Red Shield. You know how you got the Federal Reserve Bank? It's a private organization, basically rules the United States and tells it what its currency and policy and all of that kind of stuff is going to be. We've got a Reserve Bank of New Zealand that does the exact same freaking thing. And interestingly enough, when you go into the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, guess what's on the wall behind the receptionist desk?
Could
you
it
guessed
be red?
It. A gargantuan red shield.
Mm-hmm.
We are all part of a global psychopath commune, essentially, and they control us through the issuance of currency, and they manipulate us through the issuance of false left-right paradigm media, so that everybody will either think that it's either left or right, or it's good or it's bad, when the fact of the matter is it's all crap, and here's the reality over here that you'll never accept because it's the truth. And you've been programmed to see the truth as a bad thing. Okay, everybody started to be manipulated into thinking that white lies are a good thing. That's one step. And this is how policies are implemented all over the world. Doesn't matter what the policy is. If it's a eugenics policy, a carbon tax policy, it's all via incrementalism. The shorthand is you push the envelope. If people don't push back, then you push it some more.
Push it some more.
And that's eventually essentially the best plan ever if you want to take control and dominance of a population. Wives do it to their husbands all the time. There's a great film called My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and the way that the women get the wedding that they want is they try and make the men believe that they came up with the idea. That's not entirely dissimilar from how politics, American policy, and the policy of the New World Order is concerned. They do that all the time. We come up with these policies, and everybody just thinks, it sounds really nice. It's going to be good for the environment. It's going to stop kids from getting hurt. It's going to stop credit card fraud. When the reality is they just build in all these extra bits of legislation and everything. Like, have you looked at a bloody piece of legislation lately? They're thick as a freaking Bible. And they've got just as much about the New World Order in them.
And talking about the New World Order, you can just expand on this just a twee bit more, because one of the next question is your thoughts on the secret world government and the New World Order. And you're sort of actually in that, you're in that right area right now. So just kind of fill that out a little bit more for the person that asked that question.
Well, I feel that the New World Order is a very simple organization, okay? And the two things that you need to understand about this organization is compartmentalization and incrementalism. Incrementalism I explained before, which is doing things a little bit at a time. Much like the frog in the boiling pot, the story goes that if you put a frog in a pot of boiling water, it'll jump right out and save itself. If you put a frog in cold water and you heat it up gradually, it'll sit there and slowly boil to death. That's the legislation that we have being passed here. We have legislation that's basically like nuking a city to kill two people, and everybody votes for it and loves it and has no idea, because just like in the US Congress, just like in New Zealand, nobody ever reads the legislation, and most of it's written by bankers and various other assorted scum that are on the employ and have this kind of globalist mentality that national sovereignty is a bad thing, independence is a bad thing, freedom is a bad thing, and the only good thing is complete and total corporate dominance over all forms of life forever. Okay, that's the only thing they like. If you're not talking about corporate dominance over people's lives forever, sorry mate, don't like it. And this is what fascism is. The difference between communism and fascism, I think as Webster Tarpley put it best, is that fascism is when the corporations take over the state, and communism is when the state takes over the corporations. The end result is the same. There's basically no real difference. And what most people don't know about fascism is the importance of public-private partnerships. And it's actually stated in the literature, this is what fascism is. Using public-private partnerships in order to wither away the size of the state until the state will no longer exist and only corporations will exist. Then people will be redefined as no longer a citizen of the country, but as a partner in the corporation. And both the citizen and the partner from start to end have no rights anyway, because the government is and basically always has been utterly tyrannical. And if you stick your neck out to the point and you don't have any defense mechanisms in place in order to shield you from the wrath of certain descriptions of scum and secret government agents who would have you killed or maimed or worse, That's the kind of thing that you really have to be reminiscent of and comprehend to a large extent. You know, me as a young guy, I don't claim to know everything. In fact, I claim to know absolutely nothing, because I think it's the man who thinks he knows everything that obviously knows nothing. And the man who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough. And the other part of the New World Order that needs to be greatly expanded on, and people need to really understand this concept, is a compartmentalization. You don't need to control the guy who cleans the toilets in Time Warner's in order to make sure that Time Warner puts out propaganda and a whole bunch of crap bad for people and enforces New World Order agenda, do you? Who do you need to control? Well, you need to control the producers, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that would basically be about it. People at those levels, and this is the same across any organization. If you wanted to control a police department, the only thing you'd really need there is you'd need the inspector who's in charge of deciding which cases get investigated and which do not. If you want to control Harvard Medical School, you just need to control the dean. If you want to control so on and so forth. Okay,
that's
how compartmentalization works. So you have individuals inserted in key roles, key positions, and key organizations that make key decisions, and boom, you have the key to the lock of the entire human race's freaking cell. And you can lock it or unlock it behind them, however much you wish. That's why when you look at any country, anywhere in the world, and you think eugenics, you think Agenda 21, you think a Codex Alimentarius, you think global control grids, and you have a look at every single country. They're all having the exact same things happen at different stages and different forms, but sure enough, they all have the exact same fingerprints from the same individuals, from the same organizations all over the world. There are tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people that are involved knowingly in committing these crimes and frauds in order to coerce our conformity and make sure that we're all sick and unhappy and incapable of changing the world for a better place, or rather to make us think that we can't change the world for a better place. And it highlights the main lesson of the success of compartmentalization is that you don't need a majority. You don't need a large amount of individuals in order to accomplish something huge, something grand that creates long-lasting, sustained change. Because the reality is, throughout history, it has never been the majority of people that have made those changes. It's always been the small, determined minority working constantly day after day for a better world for themselves that make it happen.
Let's move
that's
on.
Why, that's why people in the truth movements are so valuable, is because they are allegedly a minority, okay? But each and every single one of those people who's a real hardcore truther, you know, like me, and wants to get the truth out and wants to care about humanity and doesn't want to see them be exterminated by copious quantities of world government forces with NATO signs all over them like they did to Libya and what have you, okay? Hello. Everybody who's working real hard in that particular way will make change. In fact, they already have, and they always will, because they decide what they want to do with that particular moment in their life. My personal belief is there's only actually one moment. It's this one. It's constant, because it's still that same moment, isn't it?
I agree with you.
Right.
I agree with you 100%.
That's stretched from all history, and it stretches on through all of eternity. So in a way,
yes, it does.
We get to share a moment with everybody who has ever lived or whoever will, and it's a very encouraging thought.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Okay, talking about inalienable rights, which even the aliens cannot take away from us, which you said earlier, there was a question that somebody's been waiting patiently to hear the answer to. They want to know if you know anything about UFO sightings in New Zealand, and is there a UFO cover-up going on down there as well?
We have some of the highest levels of recorded UFO reportings and activities going on here. I have spoken to a number of different researchers, probably most notably Stan Deo, who has written a book called The Cosmic Conspiracy, where he goes into the a long list of abductions, cover-ups, etc., that are going on all over the place. It's not one of my particular areas of expertise at this point. I haven't had too many people on my show to discuss it yet. But I'm very interested in the whole topic, and me and my girlfriend is very, very interested in UFOs. Now, I feel quite wholeheartedly that wherever there's UFO sightings, there's a UFO cover-up, because it's standard operating procedure. That's what happens. If you see a UFO, oh, it's a weather balloon, oh, that person's crazy, oh, this, that, and the other, and they'll throw out whatever demonizing terms and mechanisms that they need in order to convince people that there's absolutely nothing going on, and go straight back to work eating their alien cheeseburgers.
Benny, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I guess I'm on. Okay, if you can hear me, then I suppose we're on. Okay, something happened. They had to reconnect us on Skype.
Okay. Well, I'll reiterate what I was just saying.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Like I said, talking with Steve Quayle about this, about the false alien invasion, okay? Because I think that when you look at the amount of craft and the amount of suppressed technology that we have in the United States alone, when you look at the Nazi UFO footage and all of that kind of stuff, all those Nazis who were working on that kind of anti-grav technology and what have you, they all got imported to the United States and were positioned in key roles by the CIA under Operation Paperclip. So I have one theory. It's and again, I think it's part of the gray area sort of thing, because it's both there's alien races living on Earth here, as well as there's alien races out there, as well as we have our own UFOs and classified military aircraft that we're going to use to deceive people into thinking that all the aliens are going to come get us, the aliens are going to kill us all, we need to form a one world human government to attack them back and to unite all humanity. That's what I'm talking about, and that's probably my leading hypothesis on UFOs and aliens to this point, at least as far as the big realization's concerned, is that we do have classified aircraft that people would mistake for alien craft, and they will use them to deceive people as a pretext to having a world government.
Okay, I think that's a great question. You really capped a great answer, actually. I think you kind of really summed everything up really nicely in terms of that. Let me ask you this next question from the chat room. What do you think we as citizens of the world need to do to make things right again?
Short answer, whatever you can. If you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, you can contribute to the fight against the New World Order or alien agenda or whatever you think is most important. Primarily, what are you passionate about? What do you actually care about? If you don't care about what you're doing, if you're just going about arbitrarily and going, I'm going to be a radio show host, when you didn't really want to be a radio show host, you really wanted to paint artworks and put them on in galleries, you're not going to be the best radio show host out there. So it's about prioritizing what are my skills, what are my talents, what do I care about, what am I passionate about. If you are passionate about what you do, you will be willing to work longer hours, you will be willing to put in a lot more effort, and you'll be willing to take a lot of flack, and you will be willing to do what is necessary to get whatever you want done that you're passionate about. Okay, so that is the key modus operandi of anybody who wants to make a difference in this world, is you have to actually care about it, really, really care. Are you willing to die for it? Are you willing to kill for it? Are you willing to do anything that takes it as necessary to wake up humanity and make sure that evil freaking slime bags engaging in untold quantities of scumbaggery don't wind up having their hands on the reins of power for all time?
Well, okay? you don't want anybody to kill for it, do you? I mean, do you actually mean it to that extent? That's a little strong.
The thing is, it has to be strong. You have to be willing. If you're willing to kill for something, you're probably willing to die for it as well. And I don't know if you get put in a situation. I don't want to go out there and say I'm willing to kill in order to defeat the New World Order, because that just makes me look like a psychopath, doesn't it? Mm. But if a psychopath walks into my home with a weapon and they're prepared to exterminate me and my family, you're damn right I will kill them. Okay, that is what it really takes. It's about where the line in the sand is drawn. Is the line in the sand drawn at your life only, or is it at other people's or whatever? And my opinions are subject to change, and I'll cross that bridge when I jump off it.
Okay. What's happening down there in New Zealand with the occupation movements? Are you guys having any of that down there at all?
Yeah. Got occupations in a couple of the main cities of New Zealand. I've had a guy report for me down in Christchurch, in Wellington, and some people in Dunedin, and I've done the reporting largely in Auckland. The Occupy movement's a real interesting one. In New Zealand, it's being treated very differently from how the rest of the world has been treating their occupiers, where in, say, places like Australia or New York, you get all these thug cops that are coming in, dragging people through gravel by their hair and things of that nature that are pretty rough and hostile and quite disgusting to see, frankly. Yet in New Zealand, we have a collection of activists, particularly in Auckland. A good friend of mine, and probably if you had to point a finger at the most hardcore activist in New Zealand that covers as many issues as conceivably possible and does it in a real good, proper, efficient, and a very effective way, her name is Penny Bright. If you go to my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, Mr. News, MR News, Guerrilla Media with one R, that's all one word, you can see Penny Bright on a number of my videos because she just does so much stuff. She's been to court 22 times for being kicked out of council meetings, public council meetings. Okay, thrown out of public council meetings illegally. Okay, they even called the cops. She beat them 21 times in court after she'd been to 22. And the last case that she's got is subject to a human rights complaint to the United Nations, and I don't place much faith in the United Nations, but there you go. She loves court because she always wins. Just recently, the Auckland City Council decided that they would issue the protesters with an eviction notice. Mm-hmm. And so Penny Bright went to the court representing them and got an injunction against it. So yay, they can't do that because they'd already said that they wouldn't evict them. And because, well, basically, if you break the law and Penny Bright finds out you're doing it, your career's over.
Wow, okay.
No, I'm just joking. There's plenty of corrupt people still here that she's already exposed. It's just nobody pays any attention. And they think because they're the mayor of Auckland or the prime minister or something like that, that they can't engage in crime. It's just impossible. That's basically the level of corruption that we have here in New Zealand. We had one of the highest rates of corruption results in the Western world. Something like 4% of respondents to a recent survey in New Zealand admitted to taking a bribe within the last year. The average is like between 0.5 or 1%. Okay, so about four times as much corruption in New Zealand as there is on the average in the rest of the world. This is very ironic, although not unsurprising, because New Zealand is number one equal with Finland and Singapore on Transparency International's corruption, and you'll love this, perception index. So we've got lots of corruption, but it's not perceived, so therefore it doesn't freaking exist. I love that. If they had a corruption reality index, on the other hand, we'd be, I don't know, I think Mugabe would probably have a better track record than New Zealand to a large extent. Yeah, it's pretty rough down here, and you see the corruption all the time as an activist and as a filmmaker and a radio show host, because you get on these people like all the time. But anyway, back to the Occupy movement. Again, very different here in New Zealand. They have a very, very well stocked out camp. They have fences all around that are covered in all these placards and billboards and whatnot. There's over 100 tents in there, very well managed. They have a central meeting area with a sound system, and they play movies and stuff in the middle. When it's nighttime, projected onto a wall. They have a big kitchen tent where they make sure that everybody has nice, good, organic and vegan food served up every day. People are turning up all the time from all over the place with food and resources and donations and things of that nature so that they can keep the occupation going. Me personally, again, as I mentioned about the cynicism, because I've been to so many protests, because I've seen so many people fight so hard for so long, when I see some of these Occupy movement, people saying, this is it, this is the end, we're gonna make something happen. It just doesn't ring true for me to mm-hmm. a large extent because, I, again, they're trying to get a majority and they're talking about having world governance. And, it just seems very much like very good, genuine people who know precisely what their particular game is and what they're talking about, but they're attaching themselves to a movement that is yet to be co-opted entirely, in my opinion, but is mm-hmm. certainly the target of co-opting attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's what I believe, is that it is a strong movement full of real smart cookies who are trying to accomplish something, and the media kind of phrases it as, oh, these people haven't listed any demands. Excuse me, there's like 10 or 20 of them or something that are on their bloody website, but of course, because you're an incompetent journalist, can we swear on radio? No, I won't. Because you're an incompetent journalist, you can't even do so much as a bloody Google search. Can you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? These people are freaking morons. And if you get informed by a moron, how much brighter do you think you're going to wind up being after the experience and after the lesson? Not that much.
Not that much. You got that point. You got that very clear. I just had a conversation last night with somebody who was talking about what their demands were and the fact that they didn't really seem to have, you know, somewhat of a cohesive agenda. But you're right. On the website itself, it's very clear about what they want. I wish I had remembered to refer that person to the website. It would have eliminated that whole part of the conversation.
Well, see, that's the problem as well, is that when you have conversations with morons who don't know nothing, who only listen to the mainstream media and what have you, I'm not calling that person that you're talking about a moron or what have you, but this is the thing. They don't have complete information, and you can't exactly lug around an entire DVD wallet full of the information and or links and websites and your laptop or what have you to inform these stupid people, okay? I can tell you something, okay? But if you want to find out whether or not it's true, that means you have to find out whether or not it's true. Don't mm-hmm. go questioning me or anything. I didn't make it up. I didn't come up with the information. I'm not lying to you like the mainstream media is. Take some personal responsibility, go out there and find out what the truth is. You have the internet, you have DVD rentals and what have you. What is your problem? Get with the programming.
Good point. Unfortunately, too many people, like him, we're back to where we were at the beginning of the show. You know,
well, that's what I always say.
You know,
that's what I always say, is that in the end, everything comes back to the beginning.
Comes back to the beginning.
And in my sales experience, and this is a very important thing if you're a truther and you're trying to wake somebody up, okay? In my sales experience, if somebody ain't buying what you're selling them, you don't waste your effort on them. You go on to the next person, because that person will simply soak up your time and you ain't going to get paid. Now, in a truther sense, if somebody is too belligerent or too uninformed for you to actually wake up, and they're simply making things more difficult for you and soaking up your valuable time, don't bother with them. Just tell them, you know, you can Google it if you want, but I'm not gonna waste my time on somebody who doesn't really want to know. If you really want to know, you can easily find out. Good day, sir. You come up to somebody, on the other hand, who is very open, who is very receptive, and keeps asking you questions and asks you to elaborate on things. You can have a conversation with them for upwards of 4 hours sometimes, and that's not wasted time whatsoever, because that is actually honing your craft of how to wake people up. And you find that when people are asking you questions, your knowledge and how you explain these things that you know gets largely improved. Okay, this is what people need to realize. You need to realize when you should and shouldn't spend your time on things, because you only have a limited amount of it in each and every day. And now when I get YouTube comments from abusive people or Facebook comments of that thing, there's a great new system called Block, and you never hear from them again.
You don't even try to come up with a clever response or educate them anymore, huh? You just block them.
Pretty much. I mean, if it's straight out abuse and this person's obviously just out of their freaking minds, foaming at the mouth kind of thing, no way am I going to spend my extra loving, caring, and intelligent time with them, because they don't want to know, obviously. And if they did want to know, there's millions and millions of videos and YouTube channels and radio shows and stuff out there for which people can pursue their own enlightenment. It's not my responsibility to enlighten other people. It's only my responsibility to enlighten myself. And I just happen to have a radio show and a YouTube channel where I share it if people are interested in listening.
Very quickly, because we're getting down to time to begin to wind the show down. But I want to know, how do you manage to fill your show up? How long do you have? 2 hours? A 2 hour show a day? Is that what that comes down to?
Yeah, 2 hours a day. Hours a day, 5 days a week. And this is another important bit. I found that I'm lazy. Okay, basically, when you're lazy, you want to do things really efficiently and you want to do them effectively so that they soak up the least amount of your time so you can have some time to relax and chill out and have something to eat or a nice coffee or watch a movie or something of that nature. Spend time with your loved ones, because when you get overly absorbed into what you're working on, what you're doing, you wind up losing connection and losing the strength in your relationships and your own life outside all of this crap. And that's a bad idea. You need to be able to balance the equation. If it's not, your relationships are going to go south and your truth of career may go south as well as a direct result, because you've got to have many multifaceted platforms of support for yourself. Like, I have my listeners who support me, I have my girlfriend who supports me, I have my family that supports me, I have all these different other friends and what have you that do things for me on a volunteer basis, that kind of thing. I cannot survive without the help of other people, but the responsibility for me is just to make sure that those 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, are filled with guests or with content of some description, which I can usually rattle off the top of my head, as you've seen. Now, automation. This is great. If you want to invite a guest, make an email that invites the guest, okay? And then save that as a template. Okay. If you want me to, I can read you out my interview request template. So if somebody sends an email of an activist or somebody like that that they want me to interview, I just go to my email, new message, put their email in, put down interview request template, boom, and sent. Okay. Mm-hmm. Five seconds to invite Webster Tarpley on my show. Five mm-hmm. seconds to invite Benjamin Fulford on my show. That's mm-hmm. all you need. Here it goes. This is Vinny Eastwood. I want to give respectable artists, politicians, business people, activists, and researchers like yourself coverage on an international level on my radio show. It goes out on 25 AM FM stations worldwide, and there's a link there for the AmericanFreedomRadio.com listen live section so that they can go and see what radio stations that it's playing on. I try to help people up to the truth of the world's ins and outs of the NWO system using a little bit of humor. I've been doing this for years when no one else in New Zealand will bother to try create any credible media. I'm trying to serve my country, community, and species by giving amplification to those voices who are censored from our media in all spectrums of discourse. If you're interested to donate some of your valuable time, then let's schedule you to come on the show. In order to promote you as best we can, please send your website and bio, if any, to my email address, gorillamrnews@gmail.com. Many thanks and other nice adjectives, Vinny Eastwood.
Okay. Quick, easy, and to the point, yeah.
See, and it just took me about 10 minutes to write that out. I notice when people are trying to invite people onto their shows, they wind up having to write out an individual freaking email every single time, and it soaks up hours of their day. Okay, and there's some people out there who can only manage to get on maybe 2-3 guests a week. I get on like between 5 and 10 guests a week, okay, because of this automated system. On top of that, just below that, you want to have all your contact details. Like, I've got my email address, my Skype name, my home phone number, my mobile phone number. I ask the people to and there's a bottom section where it just kind of lays out in detail all the stuff that I do. For example, people can subscribe for $5 a week or to make a donation to me continuing my work that the media refuses to do and the activists have no time to. Where you can buy an original Made in New Zealand Mr. News DVD, support your alternative media with 7 original titles on fluoride, pesticides, vitamin C, climate change, Israel, vaccines, cannabis prohibition, here at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com/DVDs. Check out my interviews with some of the top patriots in the world, and I'm also number 12 on G. Edward Griffin's Hall of Honor. my talk show host at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, also available at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. In a world so full of madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. It's the lighter side of genocide, The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Filmmaker from YouTube.com/ Mr. News Guerrilla Media, putting in what the media leaves out, bringing you news from the front lines, New Zealand's alternative media, Mr. News. I'm also the editor of GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. If the mainstream media won't do their job, don't fight them, just replace them, because they are no longer relevant. Now, that final section with all those websites and links and all that, that's also got a separate attachment of pre-work by itself, so that if I just want to send an email to somebody about anything, it automatically comes with all of my contact details and websites and stuff for them to check out if they should choose to. So it's about putting on multiple layers and just to show people what you do, what you're all about, as quickly as humanly possible without wasting their time. I mean, just reading that email, for example, is only 6 lines, okay? Very quick, very easy, and somebody can just go, wow, I can be on 25 international AM/FM radio stations across the US and UK and Canada. Hell, great. Okay, great.
Fantastic, fantastic. And as a matter of fact, that's a great way to close out. Because you just capitalize everything and everybody knows what, you know, where your websites are and what you're about. And we are pretty much at time. So I really enjoy talking to you, man. You've got some magic going on. You definitely got some magic going on. And, but you know that. So, but I just figured I'll tell you, on air officially, you got magic going on, Vinny.
I feel it all day, every day. And again, it's I always say that it's not about me. It's about other people, because when you try and make what you're doing all about you, then as soon as you lose faith in yourself, you got nothing.
Okay,
it's all about other people having faith in you, and you having faith in other people, so that you don't wind up bitter and old and alone and miserable and having absolutely no care or regard for the world and how important it is and just how valuable you as a person are and have a role to play in every single life that comes into contact with yours.
Yeah, of course. And you got some wisdom happening up in there too. Are you still there?
Like comedians and everything. Most of my wisdom is stolen.
Well, that's okay though. As long as it's coming from a sincere place within you, it works. And it doesn't really matter, because we need to hear that wisdom repeated again and again and again. I want to thank everybody.
True.
Yeah, that's
propaganda. Propaganda.
Propaganda.
Yeah. I mean, propaganda is either black, white, or grey. Again, so you can either propagandize somebody into believing that the world is a really crappy place and nobody cares about you, and that you're going to be a slave for the rest of your life, you're going to be sick, you're going to wind up having to take psychiatric medications, or I can propagandize you into believing that you can make a huge difference in every single element of your daily life simply by wishing it and making some effort towards it. And you have the power, you are capable, you are strong, you are intelligent, and you cannot be beaten. That is my propaganda. It's Gander that's more proper.
Hey, I love that. Everybody, listen, thank you for tuning in. Thanks all of you folks for tuning in. Thank you folks that are tuning in for the archive listens. On behalf of Curtis Glees, the producer, we're going to definitely thank Vinnie Eastwood, and thank you. Vinnie, stay on to the other side of the disconnect, and I will say goodbye to you off air. And everybody else, check us out. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook, The Bright Side on Facebook. Like the fan page. Like my personal page on Facebook, David Nathan Scott. Next week, we will be back with Ty Bollinger. We will be talking, because, you know, we had that disconnect with him a couple of weeks ago. We're going to be talking about cancer, step outside of the box. So please join us and learn more about what you can do to fortify your physical form against the onslaught of this epidemic. And I want you wonderful people, you gods and goddesses, ladies and gentlemen, evolving souls, to have an amazing week. And I'm going to let the music take you out here on the bright side. And again, thanks to Vinnie Eastwood, a.k.a. Mr. News, live from New Zealand. Have a good evening, folks, and take care.